welcome to High Frequency Radio, the hottest radio network on the planet. Tonight, we're going to have a reading, a special reading. It's going to be on the Master Key. Charles Hanel. It is available at highfrequencyradionetwork.com in the PDF section, in the esoteric section. There are 24 chapters, and the book is arranged in a study format. I'm going to start with the introduction. Nature compels us all to move through life. We could not remain stationary however much we wished. Every right-thinking person wants not merely to move through life like a sound-producing, preambulating plant, but to develop, to improve, and to continue to develop mentally to the close of physical life. This development can occur only through the improvement of the quality of individual thought and the ideals, actions, and conditions that arise as a consequence. Hence, a study of the creative processes of thought and how to apply them is of supreme importance to each one of us. This knowledge is the means whereby the evolution of human life on Earth may be hastened and uplifted in the process. Humanity ardently seeks the truth and explores every avenue to it. In this process, it has produced a special literature which ranges the whole gamut of thought from the trivial to the sublime, up from divination to all the philosophies to the final lofty truth of the Master Key. The Master Key is here given to the world as a means of tapping the great cosmic intelligence and attracting from it that which corresponds to the ambitions and aspirations of each reader. Everything and institution we see around us, created by human agency, had first to exist as a thought in some human mind. Thought, therefore, is constructive. Human thought is the spiritual power of the cosmos operating through its creature, man. The Master Key instructs the reader how to use that power and use it both constructively and creatively. The things and conditions we desire to become realities we must first create in thought. The Master Key explains and guides the process. The Master Key teaching has hitherto been published in the form of a correspondence course. Of 24 lessons delivered to students, one lesson per week for 24 weeks. The reader, who now receives the whole 24 parts at one time, is warned not to attempt to read the book like a novel, but to treat it as a course of study and conscientiously imbibe the meaning of each part, reading and rereading one part only per week before proceeding to the next. Otherwise, the latter parts will tend to be misunderstood, and the reader's time and money will be wasted. Used as instructed, the Master Key will make the reader a greater, better personality, equipped with a new power to achieve any worthy personal purpose, and a new ability to enjoy life's beauty and wonder. F. H. Burgess. Forward. Some men seem to attract success, power, wealth, attainment with very little conscious effort. Others conquer with great difficulty. Still others fail altogether to reach their ambitions, desires, and ideals. Why is this so? Why should some men realize their ambitions easily, others with difficulty, and still others not at all? The cause cannot be physical, else the most perfect man physically would be the most successful. The difference, therefore, must be mental, must be in the mind. Hence, mind must be the creative force, must constitute the sole difference between men. It is mind, therefore, which overcomes environment and every other obstacle in the path of men. When the creative power of thought is fully understood, its effect will be seen to be marvelous. But such results cannot be secured without proper application, diligence, and concentration. The student will find that the laws governing in the mental and spiritual world are as fixed and infallible as in the material world. To secure the desired results, then, it is necessary to know the law and to comply with it. A proper compliance with the law will be found to produce the desired result with invariable exactitude. The student who learns that power comes from within, that he is weak only because he has depended upon outside help, and who hesitatingly throws himself on his own thought, instantly rights himself, stands erect, assumes a dominant attitude, and works miracles. It is evident, therefore, that he who fails to fully investigate and take advantage of the wonderful progress which is being made in the last and greatest science will soon be as far behind as the man who would refuse to acknowledge and accept the benefits which have accrued to mankind through an understanding of the laws of electricity. Of course, mind creates negative conditions just as readily and as favorable conditions. And when we consciously or unconsciously visualize every kind of lack, limitation, and discord, we create these conditions. This is what many are unconsciously doing all the time. The laws, as well as every other law, is no respecter of persons, but is in the constant operation, is relentlessly bringing to each individual exactly what he has created. In other words, whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Abundance, therefore, depends upon a recognition of the laws of abundance and the fact that mind is not only the creator, but the only creator of all there is. Certainly nothing can be created before we know that it can be created and then make the proper effort. There is no more electricity in the world today than there was 50 years ago. But until someone recognized the law by which it could be made of service, we receive no benefit now that the law is understood. Practically the whole world is lit by it. So with the law of abundance, it is only those who recognize the law and place themselves in harmony with it who share in its benefits. The scientific spirit now dominates every field of effort. Relations of cause and effect are no longer ignored. The discovery of a region of law marked an epoch in human progress. It eliminated the element of uncertainty and caprice in men's lives and substituted law, reason, and certitude. Men now understand that for every result there is an adequate and definite cause, so that when a given result is desired, they seek the condition by which the result may be attained. The basis upon which all law rests and discovered by inductive reasoning, which consists of comparing a number of separate instances with one another until the common factor which gives rise to them all is seen. It is this method of study to which the civilized nations owe the greater part of their prosperity and the more valuable part of their knowledge. It has lengthened life, it has mitigated pain, it has spanned rivers, it has brightened the night with the splendor of day, extended the range of vision, accelerated motion, annihilated distance, facilitated intercourse, and enabled men to descend into the sea and travel into the air. What wonder, then, that men soon endeavored to extend the blessings of this system of study to their method of thinking, so that when it became plainly evident that certain results followed a particular method of thinking, it only remained to classify these results. Method is scientific, and it is the only method by which we shall be permitted to retain that degree of liberty and freedom which we have been accustomed to look upon as an inalienable right, because people are safe at home and in the world only if national preparedness means such things as growing surplus of health, accumulated efficiency in public and private business of whatever sort, continuous advancement in the science and art of acting together, and the increasingly dominant endeavor to make all of these and all other aspects of national development center and revolve around ascending life, singly and collectively, for which science, art, and ethics furnish guidance and controlling motives. The Master Key is based on absolute science, truth, and will unfold the possibilities that lie dormant in the individual and teach how they may be brought into powerful action to increase the person's effective capacity, bring added energy, discernment, vigor, and mental elasticity. The student who gains an understanding of the mental laws which are unfolded will come into the possession of an ability to secure results hitherto undreamed of, and which has rewards hardly to be expressed in words. It explains the correct use of both the receptive and active elements of the mental nature, and instructs the student in the recognition of opportunity. It strengthens the will and reasoning powers, and teaches the cultivation and best uses of imagination, desire, the emotions, and the intuitional faculty. It gives initiative, tenacity of purpose, wisdom of choice, intelligent sympathy, and a thorough enjoyment of life on its higher plane. The Master Key teaches the use of mental power, true mind power, not any of the substitutes and perversions. It has nothing to do with hypnotism, magic, or any of the more or less fascinating deceptions which many are led to think that something can be had for nothing. The Master Key cultivates and develops the understanding which will enable you to control the body and thereby the health. It improves and strengthens the memory. It develops insight, the kind of insight which is so rare, the kind which is the distinguishing characteristic of every successful businessman, the kind which enables men to see the possibilities as well as the difficulties in every situation, the kind which enables men to discern opportunity close at hand. But thousands fail to see opportunities almost within their grasp while they are industriously working with situations which under no possibility can be made to realize any substantial return. The Master Key develops mental power, which means that others instinctively recognize that you are a person of force, of character, that they want to do what you want them to do. It means that you attract men and things to you, that you are what some people call lucky, that things come your way, that you have come into an understanding of the fundamental laws of nature and to put yourself in harmony with them, that you are in tune with infinite, that you understand the law of attraction, the natural laws of growth, and the psychological laws on which all advantages in health, social, and business world rest. Mental power is creative power. It gives you the ability to create for yourself. It does not mean the ability to take something away from someone else. Nature never does things that way. Nature makes two blades of grass grow where one grew before. The mind power enables men to do the same thing. The master key develops insight and sagacity, increased independence, and the ability and disposition to be helpful. It destroys distrust, depression, fear, melancholy, and every form of lack and limitation and weakness, including pain and disease. It awakens buried talents, supplies initiative, force, energy, and vitality. It awakes an appreciation of the beautiful in art, literature, and science. It has changed the lives of thousands of men and women by substituting definite principles for uncertain and hazy methods and principles for the foundation upon which every system of efficiency must rest. Elbert Gary, the chairman of the United States Steel Corporation, said, "The services of advisors, instructors, efficiency experts, and successful management are indispensable to most business enterprises of magnitude, but I deem the recognition and adoption of right principles vastly more important. The Master Key teaches right principles and suggests methods for making a practical application of the principles, in that it differs from every other course of study. It teaches that the only possible value which can attach to any principle is in its application. Many read books, take home study courses, attend lectures all their lives without ever making any progress in demonstrating the value of the principles involved. The Master Key suggests methods by which the value of the principle taught may be demonstrated and put into actual practice in the daily experience. There's a change in the thought of the world. This change is silently transpiring in our midst and is more important than any which the world has undergone since the dawn of paganism. The present revolution in the opinions of all classes of men, the highest and most cultured of men, as well as those of the laboring class, stands unparalleled in the history of the world. Science has of late made such vast discoveries, has revealed such an infinity of resources, has unveiled such enormous possibilities and such unsuspected forces that scientific men more and more hesitate to affirm certain theories as established and indubitably or to deny certain other theories as absurd or improbable. And so, a new civilization is born. Customs, creeds, and cruelty are passing. Vision, faith, and service are taking their place. The fetters of tradition are being melted off from humanity. And as the dross of materialism is being consumed, thought is being liberated, and truth is rising, full-orbed before an astonishing multitude. The whole world is on the eve of a new consciousness, a new power, a new realization of the resources within the self. The last century saw the most magnificent material progress in history. The present century will produce the greatest progress in mental and spiritual power. Physical science has dissolved matter into molecules, molecules into atoms, atoms into energy, and it remained for Sir Ambrose Fleming in an address before the Royal Institution to resolve the energy into mind. He says, "In its ultimate essence, energy may be incomprehensible by us except as an exhibition of the direct operation on that which we call mind or will. Let us see what the most powerful forces in nature are. In the mineral world, everything is solid and fixed. In the animal and vegetable kingdom, it is in a state of flux, forever changing, always being created and recreated. In the atmosphere, we find heat, light, and energy. Each realm becomes a finer or more spiritual as we pass from the visible to the invisible, from the coarse to the fine, from the low potentiality to the high potentiality. When we reach the invisible, we find energy in its purest and most volatile state. And as the most powerful forces of nature are the invisible forces, so we find that the most powerful forces of man are his invisible forces, his spiritual force. And the only way in which the spiritual force can manifest is through the process of thinking. Thinking is the only activity which the spirit possesses, and thought is the only product of thinking. Addition and subtraction are therefore spiritual transactions. Reasoning is a spiritual process. Ideas are spiritual conceptions, questions are spiritual searchlights, and logic, argument, and philosophy is spiritual machinery. Every thought brings into action certain physical tissue, parts of the brain, nerve, or muscle. This produces an actual physical change in the construction of the tissue. Therefore, it is only necessary to have a certain number of thoughts on a given subject in order to bring about a complete change in the physical organization of a man. This is the process by which failure is changed to success. Thoughts of courage, power, inspiration, harmony, are substituted for thoughts of failure, despair, lack, limitation, and discord. And these thoughts take root, the physical tissue actually passed away. All things have become new. He is born again, this time born of the Spirit. Life has a new meaning for him. He is reconstructed and filled with joy, confidence, hope, energy. He sees opportunities for success to which he was heretofore blind. He recognizes possibilities which before had no meaning for him. The thoughts of success with which he has been impregnated are radiated to those around him, and they turn to help him onward and upward. He attracts to him new and successful associates, and this in turn changes his environment, so that by this simple exercise of thought, a man changes not only himself, but his environment, circumstances, and conditions. You will see, you must see, that we are all at the dawn of a new day, that the possibilities are so wonderful, so fascinating, so limitless, as to be almost bewildering. A century ago, any man with an aeroplane or even a Gatling gun could have annihilated a whole army equipped with the implements of warfare then in use. So it is at present. Any man with a knowledge of the possibilities contained in the master key has an inconceivable advantage over the multitude. Introduction to Part 1. It is my privilege to enclose herewith Part 1 of the Master Key System. Would you bring into your life more power, get the power consciousness, more health, get the health consciousness, more happiness, get the happiness consciousness. Live the spirit of these things until they become yours by right. It will then become impossible to keep them from you. The things of the world are fluid to a power within man by which he rules them. We need not acquire this power. You already have it. But you want to understand it. You want to use it. You want to control it. You want to impregnate yourself with it so that you can go forward and carry the world before you. Day by day, as you go on and on, as you gain momentum, as your inspiration deepens, as your plans crystallize, as you gain understanding, you will come to realize that this world is no dead pile of stones and timber, but that it is a living thing. It is made up of the beating hearts of humanity. It is a thing of life and beauty. It is evident that it requires understanding to work with this material of this description. But those who come into this understanding are inspired by a new light, a new force. They gain confidence and greater power each day. They realize their hopes and their dreams come true. Life has a deeper, fuller, clearer meaning than before. And now, Part 1. Part 1. That much gathers more is true in every plane of existence, and that loss leads to greater loss is equally true. Mind is creative, and conditions, environment, and all experiences in life are the result of our habitual or predominant mental attitude. The attitude of mind necessarily depends upon what we think. Therefore, the secret of all power, all achievement, and all possession depends upon our mental method of thinking. This is true because we must be before we can do, and we can do only to the extent which we are, and what we are depends on what we think. We cannot express powers that we do not possess. The only way by which we may secure possession of power is to become conscious of power, and we can never become conscious of power until we learn that all power is from within. There is a world within, a world of thought and feeling and power, of light and life and beauty, and, although invisible, its forces are mighty. The world within is governed by mind. When we discover this world, we shall find the solution for every problem, the cause for every effect, and since the world within is subject to our control, all laws of power and possession are also within our control. The world without is a reflection of the world within. What appears without is what has been found within. In the world within may be found infinite wisdom, infinite power, and infinite supply of all that is necessary, wanting for unfoldment, development, and expression. If we recognize these potentialities in the world within, they take form in the world without. Harmony in the world within will be reflected in the world without by harmonious conditions, agreeable surroundings, the best of everything. It is the foundation of health and a necessary essential to all greatness, all power, all attainment, all achievement, and all success. Harmony in the world within means the ability to control our thoughts and determine for ourselves how any experience is to affect us. Harmony in the world within results in optimism and affluence. Affluence within results in affluence without. The world without reflects the circumstances and conditions of the consciousness within. If we find wisdom in the world within, we shall have the understanding to discern the marvelous possibilities that are latent in this world within, and we shall be given the power to make these possibilities manifest in the world without. As we become conscious of the wisdom in the world within, we mentally take possession of this wisdom. And by taking mental possession, we come into actual possession of the power and wisdom necessary to bring into manifestation the essentials necessary for our most complete and harmonious development. The world within is the practical world in which the men and wisdom of power generate courage, hope, enthusiasm, confidence, trust, and faith, by which they are given the fine intelligence to see the vision and practical skill to make the vision real. Life is an unfoldment, not accretion. What comes to us in the world without is what we already possess in the world within. All possession is based on consciousness. All gain is the result of an accumulative consciousness. All loss is the result of a scattering consciousness. Mental efficiency is contingent upon harmony. Discord means confusion. Therefore, he who would acquire power must be in harmony with natural law. We are related to the world without by the objective mind. The brain is the organ of this mind, and the cerebral spinal system of nerves puts us in conscious communication with every part of the body. The system of nerves responds to every sensation of light, heat, odor, sound, and taste. When the mind thinks correctly, when it understands the truth, when the thoughts sent through the cerebral spinal nervous system to the body are constructive, these sensations are pleasant, harmonious. The result is that we build strength, vitality, and all constructive forces into our body. But it is through the same objective mind that all distress, sickness, lack, limitation, every form of discord and inharmony is admitted into our lives. It is therefore through the objective mind, by wrong thinking, that we are related to all destructive forces. We're related to the world within by the subconscious mind. The solar plexus is the organ of this mind. The sympathetic system of nerves presides over all subjective sensations, such as joy, fear, love, emotion, respiration, imagination, and all of the subconscious phenomena. It is through the subconsciousness that we are connected with the universal mind and brought into relation with the infinite constructive forces of the universe. It is the coordination of these two centers of our being and the understanding of their functions which is the great secret of life. With this knowledge, we can bring the objective and subjective minds into conscious cooperation and thus coordinate the finite and the infinite. Our future is entirely within our own control. It is not at the mercy of any capricious or uncertain external power. All agree that there is one principle of consciousness pervading the entire universe, occupying all space and being essentially the same in kind at every point of its presence. It is all-powerful, all-wisdom, and all-present, always present. All thoughts and things are within itself. It is all in all. There is but one consciousness in the universe able to think, and when it thinks, its thoughts become objective things to it. As this consciousness is omnipresent, it must be present within every individual. Each individual must be a manifestation of this omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent consciousness. As there is only one consciousness in the universe that is able to think, it necessarily follows that your consciousness is identical with the universal consciousness. Or, in other words, all mind is one mind. There is no dodging this conclusion. The consciousness that forces and focuses in your brain cells is the same consciousness which focuses in the brain cells of every other individual. Each individual is but the individualization of the universal, the cosmic mind. The universal mind is static or potential energy. It simply is. It can manifest only through the individual, and the individual can manifest only through the universal. They are one. The ability of the individual to think is his ability to act on the universal and bring it into manifestation. Human consciousness consists only in the ability of man to think. Mind in itself is believed to be a subtle form of static energy from which arises the activities called thought, which is the dynamic phase of mind. Mind is static energy. Thought is dynamic energy. The two phases of the same thing. Thought is therefore the vibratory force formed by converting static mind into dynamic mind. As the sum of all attributes are contained in the universal mind, which is omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent, these attributes must be present at all times in their potential form in every individual. Therefore, when the individual thinks, the thought is compelled by its nature to embody itself in an objectivity or condition which will correspond with its origin. Every thought, therefore, is a cause and every condition is an effect. For this reason, it is absolutely essential that you control your thoughts so as to bring forth only desirable conditions. All power is from within and is absolutely under your control. It comes through exact knowledge and by the voluntary exercises of exact principles. It should be plain that when you acquire a thorough understanding of this law and are able to control your thought processes, you can apply it in any condition. In other words, you will have come into a conscious cooperation with omnipotent law, which is the fundamental basis of all things. The universal mind is the life principle of every atom which is in existence. Every atom is continually striving to manifest more life. All are intelligent, and all are seeking to carry out the purpose for which they were created. A majority of mankind lives in the world without. Few have found the world within. And yet, it is the world within that makes the world without. It is therefore creative, and everything which everything which you find in your world without has been created by you in the world within. The system will bring you into a realization of power, which will be yours when you understand this relation between the world without and the world within. The world within is the cause. The world without is the effect. To change the effect, you must change the cause. You will at once see that this is a radically new and different idea. Most men try to change effects by working with effects. They fail to see that this is simply changing one form of distress for another. To remove discord, you must remove the cause, and this cause can be found only in the world within. All growth is from within. This is evident in all nature. Every plant, every animal, every human is a living testimony to this great law. And the era of the ages is looking for strength and power from without. The world within is the universal fountain of supply. And the world without is the outlet to the stream. Our ability to receive depends upon our recognition of this universal fountain, this infinite energy of which each individual is an outlet, and so is one with every other individual. Recognition is a mental process. Mental action is therefore the interaction of the individual upon the universal mind. And as the universal mind is the intelligence which pervades all space and animates all living things, this mental action and reaction is the law of causation. But the principle of causation does not obtain in the individual, but in the universal mind. It is not an objective faculty, but a subjective process. And the results are seen in an infinite variety of conditions and experiences. In order to express life, there must be mind. Nothing can exist without mind. Everything which exists in some manifestation of this one basic substance from which and by which all things have created and are continually being recreated. We live fathomless sea of plastic and mind substance. This mind is ever alive and active. It is sensitive to the highest degree. It takes form according to the mental demand. Thought forms the mold or matrix from which the substance expresses. Remember that it is in the application alone that the value consists, and that a practical understanding of this law will substitute abundance for poverty, wisdom for ignorance, harmony for discord, and freedom for tyranny. And certainly, there can be no greater blessing than these from a material and social standpoint. Now make the application. Select a room where you can be alone and undisturbed. Sit erect comfortably, but do not lounge. Let your thoughts roam where they will, but be perfectly still from 15 minutes to a half an hour. Continue this for 3 or 4 days or for a week until you secure full control of your physical being. Many will find this extremely difficult. Others will conquer with ease, but it is absolutely essential to secure complete control of the body before you are ready to progress. Next week, you will receive instructions for the next step. In the meantime, you must have mastered this one. Introduction to Part 2. Our difficulties are largely due to confused ideas and ignorance of our true interests. The great task is to discover the laws of nature to which we are to adjust ourselves. Clear thinking and moral insight are therefore of incalculable value. All processes, even those of thought, rest on solid foundations. The keener the sensibilities, the more acute the judgment, the more delicate the taste, the more refined the moral feelings, the more subtle the intelligence, the loftier the aspiration. The purer and more intense are the gratifications which existence yields. Hence, it is the study of the best that has been thought in the world gives supreme pleasure. The powers, uses, and possibilities of the mind under the new interpretations are incomparably more wonderful than the most extravagant accomplishment, or even dreams of material progress. Thought is energy. Active thought is active energy. Concentrated thought is concentrated energy. Thought concentrated on a definite purpose becomes power. This is the power which is being used by those who do not believe in the virtue of poverty or the beauty of self-denial. They perceive that this is the talk of weaklings. The ability to receive and manifest this power depends upon the ability to recognize the infinite energy ever dwelling in man. constantly creating and recreating his body and mind, and ready at any moment to manifest through him in any needful manner. The exact proportion to the recognition of this truth will be the manifestation in the outer life of the individual. Part 2 explains the method by which this is accomplished. Part 2. The operations of the mind are produced by two parallel modes of activity, the one conscious, the other subconscious. Professor Davidson says, he who thinks to illuminate the whole range of mental action by the light of his own consciousness is not unlike the one who should go about to illuminate the universe with a rushlight. The logical process of the subconscious are carried on with certainty and regularity, which would be impossible if there existed the possibility of error. Our mind is so designed that it prepares us the most important foundations of cognition, whilst we have not the slightest apprehension of the modus operandi. The subconscious soul, like a benevolent stranger, works and makes provisions for our benefit, pouring only the mature fruit into our lap. Thus, ultimate analysis of thought processes shows that the subconsciousness is the theater of the most important mental phenomena. It is through the subconscious that Shakespeare must have perceived, without effort, great truths which are hidden from the conscious mind of the student, that Phidias fashioned marble and bronze, that Raphael painted Madonnas and Beethoven composed symphonies. Ease and perfection depend entirely upon the degree in which we cease to depend upon the consciousness. Playing the piano, skating, operating the typewriter, the skilled trades depend for their perfection execution on the process of the subconscious mind. The marvel of playing a brilliant piece of the piano while at the same time conducting a vigorous conversation shows the greatness of our subconscious powers. We are all aware of how dependent we are upon the subconscious, and the greater, the nobler, the more brilliant our thoughts are, the more it is obvious to ourselves that the origin lies beyond our ken. We find ourselves endowed with tact, instinct, sense of the beautiful in art, music, etc., or whose origin or dwelling place we are wholly unconscious. The value of the subconscious is enormous. It inspires us. It warns us. It furnishes us with names, facts, and scenes from the storehouse of memory. It directs our thoughts, tastes, and accomplishes tasks so intricate no conscious mind, even if it had the power, has the capacity for. We can walk at will. We can raise the arm whenever we choose to do so. We can give our attention through eye or ear to any subject at pleasure. On the other hand, we cannot stop our heartbeats or the circulation of the blood, nor the growth of stature, nor the formation of nerve and muscle tissue, nor the building of the bones, nor many other important vital processes. If we compare these two sets of action, the one decreed by the will of the moment and the other proceeding in majestic rhythmic course, subject to no vacillations, but a constant at every moment, we stand in awe of the latter. We see at once that these are the vital processes of our physical life, and we cannot avoid the interference that all important functions are designedly withdrawn from the domain of our outward will with its variations and transitions, and placed under the direction of a permanent and dependable power within us. Of these two powers, the outward and changeable has been termed the conscious mind, or the objective mind, dealing with outward objects. The interior power is called the subconscious mind, or the subjective mind, and besides its work on the mental plane, it controls the regular functions which make physical life possible. It is necessary to have a clear understanding of the respective functions on the mental plane, as well as of the certain other basic principles. Perceiving and operating through the five physical senses, the conscious mind deals with the impressions and objects of the outward life. It has the faculty of discrimination, carrying with it the responsibility of choice. It has the power of reasoning, whether inductive, deductive, analytical, or syllogistic, and this power may be developed to a high degree. It is the seat of the will with all the energies that flow therefrom. Not only can it impress other minds, but it can direct the subconscious mind. In this way, the conscious mind becomes the reasonable ruler and guardian of the subconscious mind. It is the high function which can completely reverse conditions in your life. It is often true that conditions of fear, worry, poverty, disease, and harmony and evils of all kinds dominate us by reasons of false suggestions accepted by the unguarded subconscious mind. All this trained conscious mind can entirely prevent by its vigilant protective action. It may properly be called the watchman at the gate or the great subconscious domain. One writer has expressed the chief distinction between these two phases of mind as follows. Conscious mind is reasoning will. Subconscious mind is instinctive desire, the result of past reasoning will. The subconscious mind draws just and accurate inferences from premises furnished from outside sources. Where the premise is true, the subconscious mind reaches a faultless conclusion, but where the premise or suggestion is in error, the whole structure falls. Subconscious mind does not engage in the process of proving. It relies upon the conscious mind, the watchman at the gate, to guard it from mistaken impressions. Receive any suggestion as true, the subconscious mind at once proceeds to act thereon in the whole domain of its tremendous field of work. The conscious mind can suggest either truth or error. If the latter, it is at the cost of wide-reaching peril to the whole being. The conscious mind ought to be on duty during every waking hour. When the watchman is off guard or when his calm judgment is suspended under a variety of circumstances, then the subconscious mind is unguarded and left open to suggestion from all sources. During the wild excitement of panic, or during the height of anger, or the impulse of the irresponsible mob, or at any other time of unrestrained passion, the conditions are most dangerous. The subconscious mind is open to the suggestion of fear, hatred, selfishness, greed, self-appreciation, and other negative forces derived from surrounding persons or circumstances. The result is usually unwholesome in the extreme, with effects that may endure to distress for a long time. Hence, the great importance of guarding the subconscious mind from false impressions. The subconscious mind proceeds by intuition. Hence, its processes are rapid. It does not wait for the slow methods of conscious reasoning. In fact, it cannot employ them. The subconscious mind never sleeps, never rests, any more than does your heart or your blood. It has been found that by plainly stating to the subconscious mind certain specific things to be accomplished, forces are set in operation that lead to the result desired. Here, then, is a source of power which places us in touch with the omnipotent. Here is in a deep principle which is well worth our most earnest study. The operation of this law is interesting. Those who put it into operation find that when they go out to meet the person with whom they anticipate a difficult interview, something has been there before them and dissolved the disposed differences. Everything has changed. All is harmonious. They find that when some difficult business problem presents itself, they can afford to make delay and something suggests the proper solution. Everything is properly arranged. In fact, those who have learned to trust the subconscious find that they have infinite resources at their command. The subconscious mind is the seat of our principles and our aspirations. It is the fount of our artistic and altruistic ideals. These instincts can only be overthrown by an elaborate and gradual process of undermining the innate principles. The subconscious mind cannot argue controversially. Hence, it has accepted wrong suggestions. The sure method of overcoming them is by the use of a strong counter-suggestion, frequently repeated, which the mind must accept, thus eventually forming new and healthy habits of thought and life. For the subconscious mind is the seat of habit. That which we do over and over becomes mechanical. It is no longer an act of judgment, but has worn its deep grooves in the subconscious mind. This is favorable for us if the habit be wholesome and right. If it be harmful and wrong, the remedy is to recognize the omnipotence of the subconscious mind and suggest present actual freedom. The subconscious, being creative and one with our divine source, will at once create the freedom suggested. To sum up, the normal functions of the subconscious on the physical side have to do with the regular and vital processes, with the preservation of life and the restoration of health, with the care of offspring, which includes an instinctive desire to preserve all life and improve conditions generally. On the mental side, it is the storehouse of memory. It harbors the wonderful thought messengers who work unhampered by time or space. It is the fountain of the practical initiative and constructive forces of life. It is the seat of habit. On the spiritual side, it is the source of ideas, of aspiration, of the imagination, and is the channel through which we recognize the divine source. And in proportion as we recognize the divinity, we come into an understanding of the source of power. Someone may ask, how can the subconscious change conditions? The reply is because the subconscious is a part of the universal mind and a part must be the same in kind and quality as the whole. The only difference is one of degree. The whole, as we know, is creative. In fact, it is the only creator there is. Consequently, we find that mind is creative and its thought is the only activity which the mind possesses. Thought must necessarily be creative also. But we shall find that there is a vast difference between simply thinking and directing our thought consciously, systematically, and constructively. When we do this, we place our mind in harmony with the universal mind. We come in tune with the infinite. We set in operation the mightiest force in existence, the creative power of the universal mind. This, as everything else, is governed by natural law, and this law is the law of attraction, which is that mind is creative and will automatically correlate with its object and bring it into manifestation. Last week, I gave you an exercise for the purpose of securing control of the physical body. If you have accomplished this, you are ready to advance. This time you'll begin to control your thoughts. Always take the same room, the same chair, and the same position if possible. In some cases, it is not convenient to take the same room. In this case, simply make the best of such conditions as may be available. Now be perfectly still as before, but inhibit all thoughts. This will give you control over all thoughts of care, worry, fear, and will enable you to entertain only the kind of thoughts you desire. Continue this exercise until you gain complete mastery. You will not be able to do this for more than a few moments at a time, but the exercise is valuable because it will be a very practical demonstration of the great number of thoughts which are constantly trying to gain access to your mental world. Next week, you'll receive instructions for an exercise which may be a little more interesting, but it is necessary that you master this one first. Cause and effect is an absolute and undeviating in the hidden realm of thought as in the world of visible and material things. Mind is a master weaver, both of the interior garment of character and the outer garment of circumstance. James Allen. Introduction to Part 3. You have found that the individual may act on the universal, and that the result of this action and interaction is cause and effect. Thought, therefore, is the cause, and the experiences with which you meet in life are the effect. Eliminate, therefore, any possible tendency to complain of conditions as they have been or as they are, because it rests with you to change them and make them what you would like them to be. Direct your effort to a realization of the mental resources always at your command, from which all real and lasting power comes. Persist in this practice until you come to a realization of the fact that there can be no failure in the accomplishment of any proper object in life if you but understand your power, persist in your object, because the mind forces are ever ready to lend themselves to any purposeful will in the effort to crystallize thought and desire into actions, events, and conditions. Whereas in the beginning, each function of life and each action is the result of conscious thought, the habitual actions become automatic, and the thought that controls them passes into the realm of the subconscious. Yet it is just as intelligent as before. It is necessary that it become automatic or subconscious in order that the self-conscious mind may attend to other things. The new actions will, however, in turn, become habitual, then automatic. The subconscious, in order that the mind again may be freed from this detail and advance to still other activities. When you realize this, you will have found a source of power which will enable you to take care of any situation in life which may develop. Part 3. The necessary interaction of the conscious and subconscious mind requires similar interaction between the corresponding system of nerves. Judge Troward indicates the very beautiful method in which this interaction is effected. He says, the cerebrospinal system is the organ of the conscious mind, and the sympathetic system is the organ of the subconscious. The cerebrospinal is the channel through which we receive conscious perfection or perception from the physical senses and exercise control over the movements of the body. This system of nerves has its center in the brain. The sympathetic system has its center in the ganglionic mass at the back of the stomach known as the solar plexus, and is the channel of that mental action which unconsciously supports the vital functions of the body. The connection between the two systems is made by the vagus nerve, which passes out of the cerebral region as a portion of the voluntary system to the thorax, sending out branches to the heart and lungs, and finally passing through the diaphragm. It loses its outer coating and becomes identified with the nerves of the sympathetic system, so forming a connecting link between the two and making man physically a single entity. We have seen that every thought is received by the brain, organ of the conscious. It is here subjected to our power of reasoning. When the objective mind has been satisfied that the thought is true, it is sent to the solar plexus, or the brain of the subjective mind, to be made into our flesh, to be brought forth into the world of reality. It is then no longer susceptible to any argument whatever. The subconscious mind cannot argue. It only acts. It accepts the conclusions of the objective mind as final. The solar plexus has been likened to the sum of the body because it is the central point of distribution for the energy which the body is constantly generating. This energy is very real energy, and this sun is a very real sun, and the energy is being distributed by the very real nerves to all parts of the body and is thrown off in an atmosphere which envelops the body. If this radiation is sufficiently strong, the person is called magnetic. He is said to be filled with personal magnetism. Such a person may wield an immense power for good. His presence alone will often bring comfort to the troubled minds with which he comes into contact. When the solar plexus is in its active operation and is radiating life, energy, and vitality to every part of the body and to everyone whom he meets, The sensations are pleasant. The body is filled with health, and all with whom come into contact experience a pleasant sensation. If there is any interruption of this radiation, the sensations are unpleasant. The flow of life and energy to some part of the body is stopped. Sign of the body is no longer generating sufficient energy to vitalize some part of the body. Mental, because the conscious mind is dependent upon the subconscious mind for the vitality necessary to support its thought, and environmental, because the connection between the subconscious mind and the universal mind is being interrupted. The solar plexus is the point at which the parts meet with the whole, where the infinite becomes infinite, where the uncreate becomes the create, the universal becomes individualized, the invisible becomes visible. It is the point at which life appears, and there is no limit to the amount of life an individual may generate from this solar center. This center of energy is omnipotent because it is the point of contact with all life and all intelligence. It can therefore accomplish whatever is directed to accomplish. And herein lies the power of the conscious mind. The subconscious mind can and will carry out such plans and ideas as may be suggested to it by the conscious mind. Conscious thought, then, is master of this sun center from which the life and energy of the entire body flows, and the quality of the thought which we entertain determines the quality of the thought which this sun will radiate. And the character of the thought which our conscious mind entertains will determine the character of the thought which the sun will radiate. And the nature of the thought which our conscious mind entertains will determine the nature of the thought which the sun will radiate, and consequently will determine the nature of the experience which will result. It is evident, therefore, that all we have to do is let our light shine. The more energy we can radiate, the more rapidly shall be enabled to transmute undesirable conditions into sources of pleasure and profit. The important question then is how to let this light shine, how to generate this energy. Non-resistant thought expands the solar plexus. Resistant thought contracts it. Pleasant thought expands it. Unpleasant thought contracts it. Thoughts of courage, power, confidence, and hope all produce a corresponding state. But the one arch enemy of the solar plexus, which must be absolutely destroyed before there is any possibility of letting any light shine, is fear. This enemy must be completely destroyed. He must be eliminated. He must be expelled forever. He is the cloud which hides the sun, which causes the perpetual gloom. It is this personal devil which makes men fear the past, the present, and the future, fear themselves, their friends, and their enemies, fear everything and everybody. When fear is effectually and completely destroyed, your light will shine. The clouds will disperse, and you will have found the source of power, energy, and life. When you find that you are really one with the infinite power, and when you can conscientiously realize this power by a practical demonstration of your ability to overcome any adverse condition by the power of your thought, you will have nothing to fear. Fear will have been destroyed, and you will have come into possession of your birthright. It is our attitude of mind toward life which determines the experiences with which we are able to meet. If we expect nothing, we shall have nothing. If we demand much, we shall receive the greater portion. The world is harsh only as we fail to assert ourselves. The criticism of the world is bitter only to those who cannot compel room for their ideas. It is fear of this criticism that causes many ideas to fail to see the light of day. But the man who knows that he has a solar plexus will not fear criticism of anything else or anything else. He will be too busy radiating courage, confidence, and power. He will anticipate success by his mental attitude. He will pound barriers to pieces and leap over the chasm of doubt and hesitation which fear places in his path. Knowledge of our ability to consciously radiate health, strength, and harmony will bring us into a realization that there is nothing to fear because we are in touch with infinite strength. This knowledge can be gained only by making practical application of this information. We learn by doing. Through practice, the athlete becomes powerful. As the following statement is of considerable importance, I will put it in several ways so that it cannot fail to get the full significance of it. If you are religiously inclined, I would say you can let your light shine. If your mind has a bias toward physical science, I would say that you can wake the solar plexus, or if you prefer the strictly scientific interpretation, I will say that you can impress your subconscious mind. I've hardly told you what the result of this impression will be. It is the method in which you are now interested. You've already learned that the subconscious is intelligent and that it is creative and responsive to the will of the conscious mind. What then is the most natural way of making the desired impression? Mentally concentrate on the object of your desire. When you are concentrating, you are impressing the subconscious mind. This is not the only way, but it is a simple and effective way. and the most direct way, and consequently the way in which the best results are secured. It is a method which is producing such extraordinary results that many think that miracles are being accomplished. It is the method by which every great inventor, every great financier, every great statesman have been able to convert the subtle and invisible forces of desire, faith, and confidence into actual, tangible, concrete facts in the objective world. The subconscious mind is a part of the universal mind. The universal mind is the creative principle of the universe. A part must be the same in kind and quality as the whole. This means that the creative power is absolutely unlimited. It is not bound by precedent of any kind and consequently has no prior existing pattern by which to apply its constructive principle. We have found that the subconscious mind is responsive to our conscious will, which means that the unlimited creative power of the universal mind is within control of the conscious mind of the individual. When making a practical application of this principle in accordance with the exercises given in the subsequent lessons, it is well to remember that it is not necessary to outline the method by which the subconscious will produce the results you desire. The finite cannot inform the infinite. You are simply to say what you desire, not how you are to obtain it. You are the channel by which the undifferentiated is being differentiated, and this differentiation is being accomplished by appropriation. It only requires recognition to set causes in motion which will bring about results in accordance with your desire, and this is accomplished because the universal can act only through the individual, and the individual can act only through universal. They are one. For your exercise this week, I will ask you to go one step further. I want you to not only be perfectly still and inhibit all thought as far as possible, but relax, let go, let the muscles take their normal condition. This will remove all pressure from the nerves and eliminate the tension which so frequently produces physical exhaustion. Physical relaxation is a voluntary exercise of the will, and the exercise will be found to be of a great value. It enables the blood to circulate freely to and from the brain and body. Tension leads to mental unrest and abnormal mental activity of the mind. It produces worry, care, fear, and anxiety. Relaxation is therefore an absolute necessity in order to allow the mental faculties to exercise the greatest freedom. Make this exercise as thorough and complete as possible. Mentally determine that you will relax every muscle and nerve until you feel quiet and restful and at peace within yourself and the world. The solar plexus will then be ready to function, and you will be surprised at the result. Introduction to Part 4. In closer with, I hand you Part 4. This part will show you why what you think or do or feel is an indication of what you are. Thought is energy, and energy is power. And it is because of all the religions, sciences, and philosophies with which the world has heretofore been familiar have been based upon the manifestation of this energy instead of the energy itself, that the world has been limited to effects while causes have been ignored or misunderstood. For this reason, we have God and the devil in religion, positive and negative in science, and good and bad in philosophy. The master key reverses the process. It is interested only in cause, and the letters received from students tell a marvelous story. They indicate conclusively that students are finding the cause whereby they may secure for themselves health, harmony, abundance, and whatever else may be necessary for their welfare and happiness. Life is expressive, and it is our business to express ourselves harmoniously and constructively. Sorrow, misery, unhappiness, disease, and poverty are not necessities, and we are constantly eliminating them. But this process of eliminating consists in rising above and beyond limitation of any kind. He who has strengthened and purified his thought need not concern himself with microbes, and he who has come into an understanding of the law of abundance will go at once to the source of supply. It is thus that fate, fortune, destiny will be controlled as readily as a captain controls his ship or an engineer his train. Part 4. The I of you is not the physical body. That is simply an instrument which the I uses to carry out its purpose. The I cannot be the mind, for the mind is simply another I uses with which to think, reason, and plan. The I must be something which controls and directs both the body and the mind, something which determines what they shall do and how they shall act. When we come into a realization of the true nature of this I, you will enjoy a sense of power which you have never before known. Your personality is made up of a countless individual characteristics, peculiarities, habits, and traits of character. These are the result of your former method of thinking, but they have nothing to do with the real I. When you say, I think, the I tells the mind what it shall think. When you say, I go, the I tells the physical body where it shall go. The real nature of this I is spiritual and is the source of the real power which comes to men and women when they come into a realization of their true nature. The greatest and most marvelous power with which this I has been given is the power to think. But few people know how to think constructively or correctly. Consequently, they achieve only indifferent results. Most people allow their thoughts to dwell on selfish purposes, the inevitable result of an infantile mind. When a mind becomes mature, it understands that the germ of defeat is in every selfish thought. The trained mind knows that every transaction must benefit every person who is in any way connected with the transaction, and any attempt to profit by this weakness, ignorance, or necessity of another will inevitably operate to his disadvantage. This is because the individual is a part of the universal. A part cannot antagonize any other part, but, on the contrary, the welfare of each part depends upon a recognition of the interests of the whole. Those who recognize this principle have a great advantage in the affairs of life. They do not wear themselves out. They can eliminate vagrant thoughts with facility. They can readily concentrate to the highest possible degree on any subject. They do not waste their time or money on objects which they can be of no possible benefit to them. If you cannot do these things, it is because you have thus far not made the necessary effort. Now is the time to make the effort. The result will be exactly in proportion to the effort expended. One of the strongest affirmations which you can use for the purpose of strengthening the will and realizing your power to accomplish is, I can be what I will to be. Every time you repeat it, realize who and what this I is. Try to come into a thorough understanding of the nature of the I. If you do, you become invincible. That is, provided that your objects and purpose are constructive and therefore in harmony with creative principle of the universe. If you make use of this affirmation, use it continuously, night and morning, and as often during as the day you think of it, and continue to do so until it becomes a part of you. Form the habit. Unless you do this, you better not start at all, because modern psychology tells us that when you start something and do not complete it, or make a resolution and do not keep it, we're forming the habit of failure, absolute ignominious failure. If you do not intend to do a thing, do not start. If you do not start, see it through even if the heavens fall. If you make up your mind to do something, do it. Let nothing, no one interfere. The I in you has determined the thing is settled. The die is cast. There is no longer any argument. You carry out this idea, beginning with small things which you know you can control, and gradually increase the effort, but never under any circumstances allowing your I to be overruled, you will find that you can eventually control yourself. And many men and women have found to their sorrow that it is easier to control a kingdom than to control themselves. But when you have learned to control yourself, you will have found the world within, which controls the world without. You'll become irresistible. Men and things will respond to your every wish without any apparent effort on your part. This is not a strange or impossible as it may appear when you remember that the world within is controlled by the I, and that this I is a part or one with the infinite I, which is the universal energy spirit usually called God. This is not a mere statement or theory made for the purpose of confirming or establishing an idea, but it is a fact, which has been accepted by the best religious thought as well as by the best scientific thought. Herbert Spencer said, amid all the mysteries by which we are surrounded, nothing is more certain than that we are ever in the presence of an infinite and eternal energy from which all things proceed. Lyman Abbott, in an address delivered before the alumni of Bangor Theological Seminary, said, we are coming to think of God as dwelling in man rather than operating on men from without. Science goes a little way in its search and stops. Science finds that the ever-present eternal energy, but religion finds the power behind this energy and locates it within man. But this is by no means a new discovery. The Bible says exactly the same thing, and the language is just as plain and convincing. Know ye not that you are the temple of the living God? Here then is the secret of the wonderful creative power of the world within. Here's the secret power of mastery. To overcome does not mean to go without things. Self-denial is not success. We cannot give up unless we get. We cannot give unless we get. We cannot be helpful unless we are strong. The infinite is not a bankrupt. And we who are the representatives of infinite power should not be bankrupts either. And if we wish to be of service to others, we must have power and more power. But to get it, we must give it. We must be of service. The more we give, the more we shall get. Must become a channel whereby the universal can express activity. The universal is constantly seeking to express itself, to be of service, and it seeks the channel whereby it can find the greatest activity, where it can do the most good, where it can be of the greatest service to mankind. The universal can express through you as long as you are busy with your plans, your own purpose. Quiet the senses. Seek inspiration. Focus the mental activity on the within. Dwell in the consciousness of your unity with the omnipotent. Still water runs deep. Contemplate the multitudinous opportunities to which you have spiritual access by the omnipresence of power. Visualize the events, circumstances, and conditions which your spiritual connections may assist in manifesting. Realize the fact that the essence and soul of all things is spiritual, and that the spiritual is the real, because it is the life of all there is. When the spirit is gone, the life is gone. It is dead. It ceases to exist. This mental activity pertains to the world within, to the world of cause and conditions and circumstances, which result are the effect. It is thus that you become a creator. This is important work, and the higher, loftier, grander, and more noble ideas which you can conceive, the more important the work will become. Overwork or overplay or overbodily activity of any kind produces conditions of mental apathy and stagnation, which makes it impossible to do the more important work that results in a realization of conscious power. We should, therefore, seek to silence frequently. Power comes through repose. It is in the silence that we can be still, and when we are still, we can think, and thought is the secret of all attainment. Thought is a mode of motion and is carried by the laws of vibration, the same as light or electricity. It is given vitality by the emotions through the law of love. It takes form and expression by the law of growth. It is a product of the spiritual eye, hence its divine, spiritual, and creative nature. From this, it is evident that in order to express power, abundance, or any other constructive purpose, the emotions must be called upon to give feeling to the thought so that it will take form. How may this purpose be accomplished? This is the vital point. How may we develop the faith, the courage, the feeling which will result in accomplishment? The reply is by exercise. Mental strength is secured in exactly the same way that physical strength is secured, by exercise. We think something, perhaps with difficulty, the first time. We think the same thing again, and it becomes easier this time. We think it again and again, it becomes a mental habit. We continue to think the same thing, finally it becomes automatic. We can no longer help thinking this thing. We're now positive of what we think. There is no longer any doubt about it. We are sure we know. Last week, I asked you to relax, to let go physically. This week, I'm going to ask you to let go mentally. If you practice the exercise given you last week, 15 or 20 minutes a day, in accordance with the instructions, you can no doubt relax physically. And anyone who cannot consciously do this quickly and completely is not a master of himself. He's not obtained freedom. He's still a slave to condition. But I shall assume that you have mastered the exercise and are ready to take the next step, which is mental freedom. This week, after taking your usual position, remove all tension by completely relaxing, then mentally let go of all adverse conditions, such as hatred, anger, worry, jealousy, envy, sorrow, trouble, or disappointment of any kind. You may say that you cannot let go of these things, but you can. You can do so by mentally determining to do so, by voluntary intention and persistence. The reason that some cannot do this is because they allow themselves to be controlled by the emotions instead of by their intellect. But those who will be guided by the intellect will gain the victory. You will not succeed the first time you try, but practice makes perfect. In this, as in everything else, you must succeed in dismissing, eliminating, and completely destroying these negative and destructive thoughts, because they are the seed which is constantly germinating into discordant conditions of every conceivable kind and description. There is nothing truer than that the quality of thought which we entertain correlates certain externals in the outside world. This is the law from which there is no escape. And it is this law, this correlative of thought object, that from time immemorable has led the people to believe in special providence. Wow, man. Introduction to Part 5. Enclosed herewith, you will find Part 5. After studying this part carefully, you will see that every conceivable force of or object of fact is the result of mind in action. Mind in action is thought, and thought is creative. Men are thinking now as they never thought before. Therefore, this is a creative age, and the world is awarding its richest prizes to the thinkers. Matter is powerless, passive, inert. Mind is force, energy, power. Mind shapes and controls matter. Every form which matter takes is but the expression of some pre-existing thought. The thought works no magic transformation. It obeys natural laws. It sets in motion natural forces. It releases natural energy. It manifests in your conduct and actions. And these in turn react upon your friends and acquaintances and eventually upon the whole of your environment. You can originate thought. And since thoughts are creative, you can create for yourself the things you desire. Part 5. At least 90% of our mental life is subconscious, so that those who fail to make use of this mental power live within very narrow limits. The subconscious can and will solve any problem for us if we know how to direct it. The subconscious processes are always at work. The only question is, are we be simply passive recipients of this activity, or are we to conscientiously direct the work? Shall we have a vision of the destination to be reached, the dangers to be avoided, or shall we simply drift? We have found that mind pervades every part of the physical body and is always capable of being directed or impressed by authority coming from the objective or the more dominant portion of the mind. The mind which pervades the body is largely the result of heredity, which in turn is simply the result of the environments of all past generations on the response of ever-moving life forces. And understanding of this fact will enable us to use our authority when we find some undesirable trait or character manifesting. We can conscientiously use all the desirable characteristics with which we have been provided, and we can repress and refuse to allow the undesirable ones to manifest. Again, this mind which pervades our physical body is not only the result of hereditary tendencies, but is the result of home, business, and social environment where countless thousands of impressions, ideas, prejudices, and similar thoughts have been received. Much of this has been received from others, the result of opinions, suggestions, or statements. Much of it is the result of our own thinking, but nearly all of it has been accepted with little or no examination or consideration. The idea seemed plausible. The conscious received it, passed it on to the subconscious, where it was taken up by the sympathetic system and passed on to be built into our physical body. The word has become flesh. It's the way we are consistently creating and recreating ourselves. We're today the result of our past thinking, and we shall be what we are thinking today. The law of attraction is bringing to us not the things we should like or the things we should wish for or the things someone else has, but it brings us our own, the things with which we have created by our thought processes, whether consciously or unconsciously. Unfortunately, many of us are creating these things unconsciously. If either of us were building a home for ourselves, how careful we would be in regard to the plans, how we should study every detail, how we should watch the material and select only the best of everything, and how careless we are when it comes to building our mental home, which is infinitely more important than any physical home, as everything which can possibly enter into our lives depends upon the character of the material which enters into the construction of our mental home. What is the character of this material? We have seen that this is the result of impressions which you have accumulated in the past and stored away in our subconscious mentality. If these impressions have been of fear, of worry, of care, of anxiety, if they have been despondent, negative, doubtful, then the texture of the material which we are weaving today will be the same negative material. Instead of being of any value, it will be mildewed and rotten, will bring us only more toil and care and anxiety. We shall be forever busy trying to patch it up and make it appear at every genteel. But if we have stored away nothing but courageous thought, if we have been optimistic, positive, and have immediately thrown any kind of negative thought on the scrap pile, have refused to do anything to do with it, have refused to associate with it, or become identified with it in any way, what then is the result? Our mental material is now of the best kind, any kind of material we want. We can use any color we wish. We know that the texture is firm, that the material is solid, that it will not fade, and we have no fear, no anxiety concerning the future. There is nothing to cover. There are no patches to hide. There are psychological facts. There is no theory or guesswork about these thinking processes. There is nothing secret about them. In fact, they are so plain that everyone can understand them. The thing to do is to have a mental house cleaning, and to have this house cleaning every day and keep the house clean. Mental, moral, and physical cleanliness are absolutely indispensable if we are to make progress of any kind. When this mental house cleaning process has been completed, the material which is left will be suitable for the making of the kind of ideals or mental images which we desire to realize. There is a fine estate awaiting a claimant. Broad arches, abundant crops, running water, and fine timber stretch away as far as the eye can see. There's a mansion, spacious and cheerful, with rare pictures, a well-stocked library, rich hangings, and every comfort and luxury. All the heir has to do is to assert his heirship, take possession, and use the property. He must use it. He must not let it decay, for use is the condition on which he holds it. To neglect it is to lose possession. In the domain of mind and spirit, in the domain of practical power, suchness is yours. You are the heir. You can assert your heirship and possess and use this rich inheritance. Power over circumstances is one of its fruits. Health, harmony, and prosperity are assets upon its balance sheet. It offers you poise and peace. It costs you only the labor of studying and harvesting its great resources. It demands no sacrifice except the loss of your limitations, your servitudes, and your weaknesses. It clothes you with self-honor and puts a scepter in your hand. To gain this estate, three processes are necessary. You must earnestly desire it. You must assert your claim. You must take possession. You admit that those are not burdensome conditions. You're familiar with the subject of heredity. Darwin, Yulee, Haeckel, and other physical science have piled evidence mountain high that heredity is a law attending progressive creation. It is progressive heredity which gives man his erect attitude, his power of motion, the organs of digestion, blood circulation, nerve force, muscular force, bone structure, and a host of other faculties on the physical side. There are even more impressive facts concerning heredity of mind force. All these constitute what may be called your human heredity. But there is a heredity which the physical science have not compassed. It lies beneath the antecedent to all their researches. At a point where they throw up their hands in despair, saying they cannot account for what they see, this divine heredity is found in full sway. It is the benign force which decrees primal condition. It thrills down from the divine, direct into every created. It originates life, what the physical science have not done nor ever can do. It stands out among all forces supreme, unapproachable. No human heredity can approach it. No human heredity measures up to it. Its infinite life flows through you, is you. Its doorways are but the faculties which comprise your consciousness. To keep open these doors is the secret of power. Is not worthwhile to make the effort? The great fact is that the source of all life and all power is from within. Persons, circumstances, and events may suggest need and opportunities, but the insight, strength, and power to answer these needs will be found within. Avoid counterfeits. Build firm foundations for your consciousness upon forces which flow direct from the infinite source, the universal mind of which you are the image and likeness. Those who have come into possession of this inheritance are never quite the same again. They have come into possession of a sense of power hitherto undreamed of. They can never again be timid, weak, vacillating, or fearful. They're indissoluble, connected with omnipotence. Something in them has been aroused. They have suddenly discovered that they possess a tremendous latent ability of which they were heretofore entirely unconscious. This power is from within, but we cannot receive it unless we give it. Use is the condition upon which we hold this inheritance. Each of us but the channel through which the omnipotent power is being differentiated and formed. Unless we give, the channel is obstructed and we can receive more. This is true on every plane of existence, in every field of endeavor, in all walks of life. The more we give, the more we get. The athlete who wishes to get strong must make use of the strength he has. And the more he gives, the more he will get. The financier who wishes to make money must make use of the money he has, for only by using it can he get more. The merchant who does not keep his goods going out will soon have none coming in. The corporation which fails to give efficient service will soon lack customers. The attorney who fails to get results will soon lack clients. And so it goes everywhere. Power is contingent upon a proper use of the power already in our possession. What is true in every field of endeavor, every experience in life, is true of the power from which every other power known among men is begotten, spiritual power. Take away the spirit, and what is left? Nothing. Then the spirit is all there is. Upon the recognition of this fact must depend the ability to demonstrate all power, whether physical, mental, or spiritual. All possession is the result of the cumulative attitude of mind or the money consciousness. This is the magic wand which will enable you to receive the idea, and it will formulate plans for you to execute, and you will find as much pleasure in the execution as in the satisfaction of attainment and achievement. Now go into your room, take the same seat, the same position as heretofore, and mentally select a place which has pleasant association. Make a complete mental picture of it. See the building, the grounds, the trees, friends, associations, everything complete. First, you'll find yourself thinking of everything under the sun, except the ideal upon which you desire to concentrate. But do not let that discourage you. Persistence will win, but persistence requires that you practice these exercises every day without fail. Part 6. Introduction to Part 6. It is my privilege to enclose Part 6. This part will give you an excellent understanding of the most wonderful piece of mechanism which has ever been created, a mechanism whereby you can create for yourself health, strength, success, prosperity, or any other condition which you desire. Necessities are demands, and demands create action, and actions bring about results. The process of evolution is constantly building our tomorrows out of our todays. Individual development, like universal development, must be gradual, with an ever-increasing capacity and volume. The knowledge that we infringe upon the rights of others, we become moral thorns and find ourselves entangled at every turn on the road, should be an indication that success is contingent upon the highest moral ideal, which is the greatest good to the greatest number of people.